This is Bristol Band Beyond for Friday, September 4th. Thanks for joining us. We'll call this the Celebrity Edition. We'll sit down to speak with President Barack Obama this week. No, just kidding. The president did not take any questions from us or anyone else, but nonetheless, he made quite an impact during his 3 hours in Dillingham Wednesday. We'll get reaction.
Still kind of unbelievable. The president of the United States, the leader of the free world, was down picking spawned out humpies on on Kanakanak Beach.
What about that other celebrity, Obama, who has been around town lately? That little brown bear, now affectionately known as Barack Obama, who was seen at the makeshift zoo at the airport. Why?
We don't want to put people in harm's way. And, you know, if the bear can continue feeding, and he may leave today or tomorrow or next week, and he can go back somewhere and den up for the winter, so much the better.
As far as we know, that bear is still alive, and we'll get an update on whether or not authorities plan to change that. Plus, a handful of former NFL players were in Bristol Bay last week. Their visit was slightly overshadowed by the president, but they made a unique impact with the kids, too. Those stories, plus tips for preserving your garden harvest for the winter.
And the whole trick to blanching is to take them out of the pot and dump them into a sink full of ice water. You will find then that you have veggies that you want to eat right out of the ice water. They're better than the veggies that you're cooking on the stove and then putting on the table warm, because that cooking process has been stopped just at the perfect time.
That's all coming up in the next half hour after a look back at some of the week's news. As part of a historic 3-day trip around the state of Alaska, Barack Obama landed in Dillingham Wednesday shortly before noon for a 3-hour stop in Bristol Bay. Mr. Obama was greeted down the steps of Air Force One by Representative Bryce Edgman, Dillingham Mayor Alice Ruby, and Robin Samuelson. He was taken to Kanakanak Beach to see subsistence fishing activities. Mr. Obama delivered remarks touting Bristol Bay as one of the United States' most important natural resources, an ecosystem he pledged to help protect.
This is one of the reasons why we have shut off oil and gas exploration in this region. It is too fragile, and it is too important for us to be able to endanger it in any sort of way. And, you know, this is something that obviously has strong support for the people whose livelihoods depend on it.
Obama then spent about an hour at the middle school gym, where he joined area youngsters in a traditional Yupik dance and met with more of the public. The president continued his Western Alaska trip in Kotzebue Wednesday afternoon, calling attention to the effects of climate change. On that same day, U.S. Pentagon officials reported there were 5 Chinese naval vessels moving in the Bering Sea off the coast of Alaska. Commander Bill Urban is a spokesperson for the Secretary of Defense.
This is the first time we've observed People's Liberation Army Navy ships in the Bering Sea. We do respect the freedom of all nations to operate military vessels in international waters in accordance with international law, so no reason why they shouldn't be there.
International waters begin 12 nautical miles offshore. The Defense Department did not immediately say how long they had been tracking the ships, or if they viewed them as an intentional provocation during the president's visit. The total inshore run of sockeye salmon to Bristol Bay in 2015 is now estimated to be 58 million. That's according to the season summary, which was issued by Fish and Game this week. Area biologist Tim Sands says that makes this year's run nearly the biggest ever.
So it's second out of the last 20 years. The only one that beat it is 95, and it's the third largest run all time.
The run was 12% larger than the department's preseason forecast. 37.6 million sockeye were counted as harvest, which is the fourth largest catch in the bay's history, going back to records from the 1880s. The ex-vessel value was 15% below the 20-year average, based on the low prices paid to fishermen this season. A federal judge in Anchorage granted the Pebble Partnership's request for a subpoena for a former EPA official who played a central role in the agency's work in the Bristol Bay watershed. Philip North has been ordered to appear in Anchorage in November to answer questions related to his involvement as part of a federal lawsuit Pebble brought against EPA. Mike Heatwell is a Pebble spokesperson.
We just really want to get a complete picture as to what was going on there, and certainly talking with Mr. North is as a central person in all of this would be very beneficial.
North retired from the agency 2 years ago and apparently left the country. The EPA says a decade's worth of his official emails were destroyed when his computer hard drive crashed in 2010. After more than 3 weeks sitting overturned in the Nooshigak River, the tug Challenger and its barge were recovered and hauled down to Dillingham. Vitus Marine was hired to do the salvage work and got it done faster than expected, says ops manager Drew McIntyre.
As salvage jobs go, it went very smooth, and something that Vitus has had a lot of experience with before Vitus was incorporated as a company. Mark Smith, our CEO and founder, has spent a lot of time doing salvage work on the Nushagak, so this is home turf for him, and he was up there to facilitate the entire operation.
The 18 scrapped cars were also found and recovered. All were taken to a haul-out spot at Scandinavian Beach. Alaska DEC said less than 100 gallons of diesel were spilled when the Challenger went down. It was being operated at the time by Ridge Contracting out of Anchorage. Students at Dillingham City Schools finally went back this week, a little later than the Southwest and Lake and Penn school districts. Middle and high school principal Bill Schwann said the year got off to a good start Monday.
It was a very smooth first day of school. Now this is my 26th year, and you don't always get to say that, you know, and having the excitement of the President of the United States being here and trying to get organized, everything went off really, really smoothly.
Last Friday, Southwest Region Schools celebrated the opening of their newest facility. 58 students attended in Koliganek and were joined by teachers, staff, and guests as they cut the ribbon at the new home of the Huskies. Principal Cody McCanna says everybody is still adjusting a bit in the new space.
All K-12 students now are at one end of the building. Their doors are just literally feet apart. And so that creates some new traffic flows that kids are getting used to as well. But, you know, it's just a really nice space. And you can see everyone's excitement in the kids and in the parents as they were going through the building and looking at just how nice it really was. So it was exciting, and it still is.
The Huskies have three new teachers this year, including one former Koliganek student now returning to teach. And yesterday morning, authorities in Togiak reported that a single house fire had claimed the life of one man whose body was found after the fire was put out. The state's fire marshal is investigating and has so far not yet named the victim or the cause of the fire. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond. For our top story this week, we'll get reaction from two voices on the visit to Bristol Bay by President Barack Obama, Alana Hurley and Abe Williams. Both are commercial fishermen. Both were in Dillingham for the visit Wednesday, but they have vastly different opinions on protecting the resources the president called attention to during his trip to the region. Our first guest is Alana Hurley, who is the director of the United Tribes of Bristol Bay and had about as unique an encounter with the president of the United States as anyone could ever claim to have. Alana, it's good to have you on again.
You ended up in an extremely unique spot. You fished with President Obama.
Yeah. It's still kind of unbelievable that the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, was down picking spawned out humpies on Kanakanak Beach with...
All right. Did you actually catch fish in that net, or was that staged? It was
we
low
did.
Tide.
I set the net myself. A bunch of us set it. I pulled it out. And
the whole time, I'm sure, thinking like, oh, my gosh, low tide. Are we going to catch any fish?
Yeah, we were like, how are we going to, you know, incorporate this with the president's experience? We really wanted to have, you know, him to have an authentic, genuine experience with a subsistence net. And lo and behold, there's like five or six humpies by the time he gets there in the net. It was amazing.
Well, that's pretty cool. All right. So what was that experience like to hand him? You had the most awkward experience probably of the whole trip, by the way, in Alaska. That nature called here for one of these humpies. What happened here?
Well, they're, you know, it's that time of year for them. These are the late runners. And they were definitely some spawned out fish. And he had a first-hand experience and what that means.
So right as May handed him a humpy, it kind of it spawned.
Yeah, it squirted on him. He thought it was funny.
That's
good. It was everyone had a good laugh.
Well, the president seems like he's had a good trip everywhere he's been in the state. The weather turned a little sour here. It was beautiful the day before, but that's Bristol Bay, and that's what you said last week. So, I don't know. You're a commercial fisherman. What did it feel like? That felt like fishing weather, didn't it?
It did. It was windy and cold and raining. A lot of, you know, we were really wet. We were trying to stay dry, but it definitely did. It felt like It felt like fishing, and people turned out regardless, and a little wind and rain doesn't keep people in Bristol Bay.
Whose smoked fish did he have down at the beach?
I'm not sure, but he definitely tried it. He had some strips, and he loved it, and he was really excited to try some of the canned salmon that they sent home with him.
Now, do you always, does Kanaknak Beach always have fish hanging to dry in the rain like that, or... can you admit that was kind of a staged one?
That was, you know, we wanted the president to see about what subsistence fishing looked like. We wanted him to see how it was traditionally processed by the Yupik people of this region. And rain or shine, he was able to see that. So
all right.
We were happy.
Well, I guess those of us who were waiting to see what came of this trip, we weren't sure if he was going to deliver remarks about climate change or pebble or what. He didn't take any questions, but he did deliver some pretty interesting remarks that this region will surely never forget having the president stand on the beach. What did you hear from him down there today?
Oh, man. He definitely spoke to the heart of this region. He basically said that, you know, he recognizes the importance of salmon in this region. He recognizes how unique our region is. He recognizes how important salmon are to the Yupik and Dena'ina Lutuk people who have lived here for thousands of years, and he respects that. But he also recognizes the importance of salmon to the nation and how important Bristol Bay is to the nation, and that he is very committed to protecting Bristol Bay salmon and the people that live here and depend on those salmon. And what they mean to the world. And that was amazing to hear.
That's been a long time coming for a lot of you, I think.
That's been a long time coming, and he had definitely recognized it when he stopped offshore drilling, but he recognized that there are still threats.
Now, he didn't
like
say
pebble.
No,
but he said there are definitely still threats to salmon in this region, and that he was committed to, you know, recognizing that that it was critical to protect salmon and the watershed of this region. And that was, we're just overjoyed to hear that.
Okay. Not many people were down at the beach. It was a closed event. KDLG had to pay to send a reporter along with a pool. Were you disappointed at all that more people couldn't participate with this event while he was here?
Yeah, well, while I had nothing to do with who had access and who didn't, I was just told where I needed to be, and I think the rest of the region would have definitely been overjoyed to meet the President of the United States. While he wasn't able to meet as many people as we would have liked, I think that the only reason he is here and he came to Bristol Bay was because of everybody in this region for the last decade really, really, really fighting and bringing our voices to the nation that Bristol Bay salmon needs to be protected, or our watershed needs to be protected. That's the reason he was here today. He was here today because of the people of this region.
Maybe there will be a next time, but certainly unique for a first time. And Alana Hurley, it's always good to have your perspective. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave.
Our next guest is Abe Williams, who fishes the Crimson Hunter and is the president of Nuna Resources. Nuna Resources advocates for projects like Pebble in the region. Williams, who was born in Naknek, was also recently elected to the board of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Good to have you in town.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the program. You were in town with several folks from the region to offer a different message to President Obama. What was that message, and did you get a chance to meet him?
We spent some time at the airport. I got to shake his hand, very blessed in that manner. And we did drop a couple letters off to a staffer that will pass them on to President Obama that offer a different message from folks in the Iliamna region. And that message being, you know, we want to see due process and a fair process at that. And so we're here to develop that message in an area that is passionately opposed to the project. And, you know, I'm very respectful to the concerns around protecting the resource that we so graciously have an opportunity to harvest each and every year.
Well, there's certainly not a lot of support for the mine in Bristol Bay, but there's also a lot of support for the way the EPA is undertaking their current effort to preemptively block its development. But there are other voices in the region who would like to see it go to NEPA. As a fisherman, is that a tough view to hold and speak out about?
You know, it's to me, no, it's not. In fact, you know, our federal and state governments have policies and procedures that are in place that we should abide by across the board when it comes to deciding if a mine is built or if a cannery is built or if there's pilings driven into the water or there's grind and discharge issues at some of the canneries. I think, you know, most recently here we had to build a meal plant in Naknek because of some of the EPA issues with the grind and discharge for salmon waste. So at the end of the day, I think fair and due process is due all the way across the board, whether you're in the fishing industry, the mining industry, the oil and gas industry, any industry for that matter.
Do you think a fair and due process will result in a mine, and does that make you nervous?
It's really hard to tell. You know, I don't know the details behind the project itself. You know, none of us have seen a formal mine plan. That's never rose to surface. There's some hypothetical scenarios out there. I think that if the folks that propose this particular project could prove through a rigorous process that it could be developed safely and adequately, it should probably be built. I think it offers economic stability to our region, which has suffered in this year very low salmon prices, and at the same time, some of the other parts of our region have suffered out-migration and school losses, and those are devastating to communities.
You ran for a spot on the RSDA board this past year and won that seat. Is it difficult to support the idea of Pebble Mine and run for a leadership role in this fishery? And how do you feel about being on the RSDA board, seeing as how the RSDA has helped lead the fight against Pebble?
You know, it's not difficult. I'll allow my moral compass to guide me in where I should voice my opinion when it comes to regard to the Pebble project, or if in fact I need to do the same, just the opposite for the BBRSDA. But I think, you know, what really encouraged me to run for a BBRSDA position was the fact that 1% of my total catch goes to fund this organization. And when that organization was designed, it was designed around marketing and making a product that would help the revenues back to the fishermen. And I want that organization to focus on that, and I hope to guide it in that direction.
Today was just incredibly unique to have the President of the United States in this region. And a lot of folks around the country know a little bit about Bristol Bay. They hear about it either for sustainability issues or just the fact that it is the salmon capital, the sockeye salmon capital of the world. And very neat to have the president step foot in this country, even just for a few short hours. It was hoped to be a very regionally represented visit. Was it, in your mind? Do you think that the different views and voices of the region were represented today?
You know, I don't think that the region, you know, the Iliamna region, their voices were heard. And having the opportunity last minute to get to where we are now and kind of share that message, if you will, I'm thankful for that. But it would certainly be nice to be invited to the table to have that discussion, and I think that's a healthy discussion to have. You know, we may have a difference of opinion or a difference of a view on how we see resource development and rural Alaska or Alaska in general, but let's not disenfranchise one because of our strong views.
Abe Williams, good to speak with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for this time.
We couldn't help but appreciate most of all what the kids had to say this week. Here's what a few told us after Obama's visit.
We see a lot of black cars and army men, and we see a good plane flying by that the president was in. We are holding up flags. I was too cold to hold one.
Well, I left it in my friend's truck, so I didn't get to wave it in. Besides, I didn't have time, so.
That was pretty cool because, first of all, President Obama, he went and danced.
It was kind of weird and pretty nervous.
I shook the president's hand. I got up close picture and some videos of him. and I'm actually pretty excited that he came to Dillingham.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. For a little bit more than a week now, a brown bear feeding in and around Squaw Creek near the Airport Y has been Dillingham's second most talked about visitor. That's arguable. Dozens of photos posted to Facebook show a young-looking bear feeding on fish and grass in broad daylight. KDLG's Hannah Colton went around to see what the fuss was all about.
When you watch an animal as big and powerful as a brown bear up close, every move it makes can seem extraordinary. That was the sense I got Tuesday night at Squaw Creek from about a dozen people quietly staring at the bear as it paid them no mind. Werner Wilson was among them.
It looks like somebody mowed the lawn and he's just sitting there and eating the grass and relaxing.
Going over a pine tree.
It's been pretty neat. I've been down here about an hour and a half. I just can't get enough of it.
That's Dillingham's Leo Roll, who's seen bears up close before, but never for this long. He and his young son, Jaden, were fascinated.
Earlier, before he got in the water, he came right down. I mean, he was 15, 20 feet away from us. And I was like, that's a bit close for me, so I exited stage left.
That was the right thing to do, according to Neil Barton, the area wildlife management biologist for Fish and Game in Dillingham. In the past, Barton has dealt with quite a few urban bear interactions gone wrong and wants to make sure people at Squaw Creek act smartly to avoid any trouble.
If it's near the railing or starts feeding toward them, just back off and get in your car and get out of there. I mean, we don't want to put people in harm's way. And, you know, if the bear can continue feeding and he may leave today or tomorrow or next week and he can go back somewhere and den up for the winter, so much the better.
Brown bears aren't due in their dens for about another month and a half, but Barton says this one looks to be eating well, despite an apparent injury to its mouth area.
I did see, and other people have pointed out to me as well, that it appears to have a wound on its jaw and upper left lip, and you can kind of see where it looks torn. And when he was chewing grass, you could actually see almost into his mouth because there is a wound there. I'm not sure what it's from, but you know, the bear seems to be feeding a lot, seems to be pretty focused on that, which is what they do this time of year to put on weight for the winter, and the bear looks fairly healthy to me.
Barton says as long as both the bear and its spectators behave themselves, the bear should be able to go on its natural way. Back at Squaw Creek, people seem to be heeding that advice.
It's not really tame, so gotta be careful, that's all I say.
Steve Wassily Jr. has lived in Dillingham for over 30 years.
Have you ever seen a bear act like this?
No. It's first time. It's amazing. And then this helps too, the railing. Almost kind of like a partial zoo. But I'd still be careful.
Besides commenting on the bear's fishing and grazing, many of the watchers said they were hoping the bear would show up again the next day, in time to give the president a show. Here's Wilson again.
It's amazing that it's happening right when President Obama's coming and them calling it Bear Act, that's genius. I think it's great.
I tracked down this so-called genius.
The name of the bear is Barack Obama.
Nathan Katsubis is a Dillingham High School biology teacher and regular pun maker.
When I first thought of the silly name for the bear, Barack Obama, my wife forbade me to speak it in public or post it on Facebook. Of course, I just waited till she left the room, and then I posted it on Trading Post immediately because, you know, some jokes are just so bad that they're acceptable.
But the Katsubis family bear antics were not yet over. On Wednesday, Nathan's wife Kelly and her friend both dressed their months-old babies in bear outfits and waited at Squaw Creek for the motorcade to pass.
And their plan was that Obama would have to see them all and stop and give them all hugs or something.
Did it work?
No, the bear stayed hiding, and the president drove past. They'll think of a different scheme for next time the president comes.
The bear was seen again Thursday night heading through the woods behind Nine Away, so it seems the Secret Service didn't carry it off. Now, fans of the bear are hoping he or she finds a good berry patch, stays out of trash cans, and perhaps returns again someday to feed our curiosity at Squaw Creek. In Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
sees Big Bear. Going down the road, got the fellas on the back. Chicken on his fingers and a Bud six pack. Drinking in the morning, little hair of the dog. He's sweet as a bird, but it smells like a hog. Big Bear, he's iron tough. Big Bear's got a chest like a rug.
The excitement in Dillingham and Naknek during the past week extended not only to Obama supporters and Bear watchers, sports fans had their day as well. Five former NFL players visited several southwestern Alaska communities with a mission to inspire kids. KDLG's Elijah Hunt has the story.
For over a decade, Celebrities in Motion has been going around the country, visiting tribal lands and discussing ways to maintain a healthy and safe lifestyle. Their trek to the southwestern part of our state marks the first time that their events have been held in Alaska. Former Dallas Cowboys and Oakland Raiders player Ron Fellows, who is the founder of the organization, says,
"We don't want to play basketball. We used to play football, you know, and we're just trying to talk to the kids about, you know, trying to stay drug and alcohol free and try to do the right thing, you know, and be responsible for their actions."
Along with Fellows, the players in attendance included Swervin' Mervin Fernandez and Doki Williams, also of the Oakland Raiders, Mark Lee of the Green Bay Packers, 49ers, and Saints, and Stephon Page of the Kansas City Chiefs. Each player introduced themselves with a speech. Page spoke directly to the youth in attendance with an important message.
You have greatness in you. You have something special that nobody else has. It's in your DNA. The thing is, are you willing to make the sacrifice to be that greatness, to come out in you? Only you can do.
After the introductions, the players challenged around five teams of five players from kids to adults to play against the athletes in timed bouts of basketball. As entertaining to watch as it is to play, the former NFL stars played with an almost globetrotter-like fashion, pulling small, entertaining pranks on the court like calling a fake timeout and then going for the hoop. The audience received raffle tickets. Prizes included the jerseys each player was wearing and miniature team helmets, both personally signed from the player of their respective teams. Although everybody did not receive a raffle item, everyone left with an autograph from each player. All the members of the audience, and especially the people who played, had a great time and made memories that will stick with them for years to come. In Dillingham, I'm Elijah Hunt.
And finally today, the temperatures dropped below 30 a few nights earlier this week. While those frosty mornings probably knocked down a few bugs and probably got a few moose moving around, it also started the clock ticking on how long area gardens will keep kicking out the fresh produce we so eagerly snatch up at the weekly farmers markets. I asked Patricia Tridey-Karskalin of Unicorn Gardens to stop by and share some tips on how to put some of the harvest away for the months ahead. It's good to have you in the studio.
Thanks.
We just had you on a few weeks ago, and it's always nice to talk to you in person. Asked you here today to talk about some tips for preserving what is this fall harvest that has, well, first question I would ask you is how many more weeks of good fresh produce do we have?
Weather dependent. We really don't know. We certainly are not going to have as long a fall as we did last year, but last year was way off the curve.
Warm
on,
for a long time into September.
It was. And we've already had stronger frosts than what we had last year at this time.
What did that frost the other night do to you? And did it take its toll at all?
Oh, yeah. There's still some green leaves on the bottoms of the potato plants, but that's just because they were really huge and they were protected by the other ones. But they're most of the way gone. Where potato plants are concerned, though, if you've got potatoes in your garden and they died back, don't go digging them right the first day after they freeze. Let them sit there for a week or two. Any of the energy that's in the plant will go back into the potato, and the skins will toughen up, and you won't scratch them up so bad when you dig them. So don't run out there and dig them just yet. Give them a little time to get used to being tubers instead of a plant. And,
good tip number one, and I know at least one listener who will appreciate that right off the top of my mind, but assuming we have a little bit shorter season this year than last, it's now time to start thinking about taking some of this fresh produce and preserving it. What, in your mind, are the couple of main ways to do so?
Anything you can possibly get away with putting in a cool room, depending upon what be your cool room, could be a spare refrigerator in the garage, your cool room could be crawl space, whatever, that's the best thing. Carrots, which can stay in the ground until the ground's trying to freeze. Beets can stay in the ground till it's freezing. I took mine out with a pickaxe last year. Not recommended. but any of that stuff, keep it in the ground till it looks like the ground's going to freeze. And then you can, take it out of the ground, wash it, put it in a cardboard box, and put it someplace cool.
Cool like would I said, be 40 degrees-ish?
Oh, that would be ideal, yeah. 30, high 30s would be ideal.
And how long will they keep in a root cellar or cold room like this?
If you can keep it down to around 30 in the high 30s, I've been eating carrots till well after Christmas.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And some of your potatoes, those benchies, they actually tend to improve.
The potatoes in general will get sweeter and nicer the closer to freezing you can keep them without actually freezing them, the better they get.
Well, let's talk about some of the other methods. What about, now this is like the old school, some of us remember our grandmothers doing vegetable canning.
You can can vegetables. They're a low-acid food, so you have to treat them the same way you would fish or meat. But you don't have to can it nearly as long.
It's not a pressure canned.
It's pressure canned, yes.
It's pressure canned.
It's pressure canned, but you don't have to do it for the 90 minutes you would do mousse, say.
All right. So let's say you have a good crop of beets. How long would you do those for?
Probably 30, 40 minutes.
Oh, that's not
for
so,
beets.
Okay.
Beans are even shorter than that. Generally, things that come out of the ground, it's a denseness thing too. But not nearly as long as you do meat or fish.
What works well for canning that you don't think people would realize or do very often?
You could can potatoes. I've done it.
All right.
It changes the texture, but if you dice them all up and can them, then they're just ready to turn into potato salad immediately.
Well, that's a nice thing.
I'll can zucchini. I'll can a mix of zucchini and fennel in tomato juice, and you can just heat that up and serve it in a bowl as a side dish, or you can throw it in sauces or various things.
Okay.
You can throw some of your veggies in with some mousse and make just little
make the whole meal.
Lunch jars.
Right. Of course, you have to get that mousse first, but...
You have to get the mousse first, yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one on that one.
So the other one that right now is on my mind, which I've yet to do successfully myself, is blanching. Because I see it at the farmer's market, there's a whole bag of broccoli, or there, you can buy all this kale right now for just a few more weeks. Boy, it just sounds like a chore, but it's not, right?
Blanching?
What's the theory behind it?
It's a necessary evil.
Evil.
If you're going to freeze vegetables, you have to blanch them. Blanch them is just cooking them a minimal amount. What you're doing there is you're deactivating enzymes, the ripening enzymes. Veggies will, even at freezing temperatures, will continue to mature. For the most part, it's not a good thing. You can freeze tomatoes, peppers, a few things without blanching them. But most things, they keep going downhill in the freezer, even if you vacuum pack them and everything else. If you have a kettle of boiling water with a strainer, you put them in it for, there's blanching charts you can look up anywhere.
But it's just a couple of minutes.
All right. Couple, 3 minutes, And then the whole trick to blanching is to not cook them any longer than that. And that means take them out of the pot and dump them into a sink full of ice water.
Immediately. So they stop cooking. Okay.
And you will find then that you have veggies that you want to eat right out of the ice water. They're better than the veggies that you're cooking on the stove and then putting putting on the table warm, because that cooking process has been stopped just at the perfect time.
Interesting.
And, yeah, broccoli will be just as bright green and perfect as ever, but you've got to do that ice water step to it.
Patricia Trotty-Karskalin, Unicorn Gardens. It's always good to speak with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
That's it for this week's show. What an interesting week for the region. Despite a few bruised feelings and no sit-down interview with the commander-in-chief, the pictures and video alone of Barack Obama dancing with our youngsters and picking fish at our beach will add an incredible page in the history of Bristol Bay, Alaska. It's time for this host to get out into the country a bit this fall, so this program will take next week off. Please send us feedback and ideas, songs, poems, essays, or op-eds to dave@kdlg.org, and find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website. I'm Dave Benninger. Hope to see you back here in a couple of weeks.
Plant your rows straight and long, temper them with prayer and song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. Old Crow watching hungrily from his perch in yonder tree. In my garden I'm as free as that feathered thief up there. Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. And inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain.